The Compliance Perspectives podcast is sponsored by Protiviti, a global consulting firm serving the healthcare industry. Learn more at Protiviti.com. Welcome to the Compliance Perspectives podcast. I'm Adam Turteltaub from the Society of Corporate Compliance and Ethics and Healthcare Compliance Association. Joining us today are two guests, both from Cleveland. We have Casey Ingram, General Counsel and Chief Compliance Officer at ISK Americas. Casey's been a frequent guest of the podcast. And Rocco DeBotetto, partner at Hahn Lesser. And we're going to be talking today about compliance and bankruptcy. First, Rocco, maybe it'd be good if you could give a quick overview of the bankruptcy process and why it exists.
Thanks, Adam. For purposes of today's discussion, we'd focus on Chapter 11 of the bankruptcy process, which I think is most salient to the audience. And the real purpose of that that chapter of the bankruptcy code is to reorganize a company and redeploy its assets productively. So when a company gets into financial trouble, the whole goal of the code in this respect is to sort of stay the activities of creditors, give the company a breathing spell, and allow them to reorganize, redeploy the assets in a productive manner, and ideally preserve jobs, which benefits everybody.
That it would. Now, Casey, how does the compliance officer's role change when a company declares bankruptcy, or does it?
So the basic function does not change. Your job is still to find, fix, and prevent compliance problems. A lot of what changes is the reporting structure. So when a company enters into Chapter 11, the debtor company still has to act in the interest of the company, but it also has to act in the interest of the estate as a whole. So that means the creditors, shareholders, anybody who has an interest in the company. That's done by the debtor in possession, which are the officers and managers appointed to run the company during the bankruptcy. So that could be a completely different group of people than what you've normally reported to. So as a compliance officer, your first task is going to be make sure that they know who you are and what you do. Restructuring is a very stressful process. It's a very fast-paced process. There's not a lot of downtime. And the number one focus is restructuring the company so you can do, as Rocco said, save jobs and keep the company moving forward. So they're not going to be thinking about compliance. So as a compliance officer, you need to get in front of them quickly. Let them know what you need. Talk to them about what you do, how you do it. And really push the fact that compliance provides a sense of stability through the company. It's going to help the company not have any major issues while it's going through the bankruptcy. And that stability is important because bankruptcy can be chaotic. And the other key aspect is compliance officers go in and tell them, look, I'm not going to increase your workload. I'm going to help minimize it. I'm going to focus on the things that keep the company safe and keep the company operational so you don't have to. And so, again, the major role doesn't change, just how you report it up and the people that you're going to be dealing with will change.
Well, and I would imagine, too, that a lot of those people coming from the outside aren't fully aware of the compliance risks that the organization has. Now, Rocco, how can the compliance officer further help the organization through the bankruptcy process?
Well, I think Casey, hit the nail on the head when he said, introduce yourself to the leadership team and make sure they know who you are. And just because a company is operating in bankruptcy doesn't mean you necessarily have a brand new leadership team. Sometimes you do, sometimes you don't. Sometimes there can be a chief restructuring officer appointed, which is new to everybody. But again, inserting yourself into that process and making yourself known and letting everybody know what you can do and how you can help is probably the most important thing you can do right out of the gates. And what people need to remember is just because you're in Chapter 11 and you maybe have certain operating requirements like reporting or budgetary and things of that nature, but at its core, when you're in Chapter 11, it's business as usual. You're still trying to run a company. You're still trying to make money. You're still trying to service customers. It is business as usual, because if you're not running as business as usual, then you really aren't maximizing the value of the estate. you're really not doing what's best for the company and ultimately its creditors. And I guess, you know, if you're in compliance, it's easy to let yourself be overshadowed by the bankruptcy itself and this drive to exit and this drive to reorganize, which, as Casey pointed out, can be very hectic. So I guess the important thing here is to make yourself known and let everyone know what you do in the compliance role and how you can help. Another important thing you can do is if there are certain key contracts that help you, that help compliance, that help you accomplish the company's goals, you need to make those contracts known because in bankruptcy, you can assume and reject contracts, executory contracts. We won't go into the nuances of what makes a contract executory, but suffice it to say, generally speaking, it's a contract that performance remains on both sides, like a service agreement. But if there's an important contract or contracts that you need, and you need to make sure that they stay with the company as it is reorganized, I think that's one, I would say, very substantive way in which you can assist the reorganization process. Because believe me, some companies have thousands of contracts, and contracts can slip by the wayside every day of the week when they're, you know, buried in a file drawer somewhere. And it's your job to make sure the ones that are important to you are brought to the surface.
Now, that's obviously one key area for compliance teams to focus on. What are some of the other areas, Casey, that compliance people should be on the lookout for during what's obviously going to be a stressful time for the organization, as much as the organization is trying to be business as usual?
The number one focus should be on advertising and monitoring the hotline. Push the hotline hard. And this goes back to Rocco's comment about contracts. You need to make sure that the hotline is assumed, or if not assumed, is negotiated in a way that you still maintain a hotline. Because people are very, very stressed in bankruptcy. You may lose key employees. There may become compliance gaps that you're not aware of. Because if someone says, oh, the company's gone into bankruptcy, I'm going to take a different job, they handled a certain compliance function, and that doesn't get passed along, you need to make sure you have your eye out for it. The hotline will be probably the first way you find out about it. The second way is to have a very visible presence in the company. A lot of walking around, talking to people, asking those questions. So if you do find out someone left, figure out, do they have a compliance function that needs to be covered? Who's covering it? How can we fill that gap? Stressing that, as Rocco said, it's business as usual. So you still need to follow policies and procedures. Nothing's changed from the way you should operate. And this is where the stability comes in. As compliance, if you go around and you push, you know, operation as usual, follow your procedures, follow your policy, continue the role, that provides that level of stability and comfort that people need to stay calm during this chaos. You're going to have a lot of people worried about their jobs. There's going to be temptations to cut corners, bend edges a little bit. And so you have to make sure that as a compliance officer, you're there, you're providing that presence. And again, it's not any different from the normal job. It's just amped up to 11 because everything is amped up to 11 as you're going through a Chapter 11. And you're going to hear a lot of noise and a lot of things that don't matter, but within that noise is going to be the important data that you need. And you're going to have to act fast because, again, the bankruptcy process, I've seen it, a company go from filing to sale in 2 months. So if an issue arises, you need to investigate quickly, act quickly, and get it up to the debtor in possession and the people running the company so they can respond quickly. There's not going to be a lot of lag time. You're not going to have a lot of grace period to work with. So it's going to be a very hectic, chaotic, fast environment.
Wow, that certainly sounds like there's going to be a lot on people's plates. Now, let's turn things around a bit. We've been talking thus far about when your company is in Chapter 11. Let's look at another scenario where your company is about to acquire another one that is in bankruptcy. Is there anything different to be looking for when conducting the due diligence?
Well, I don't know that there's anything different that you would be looking for, but taking a quick step back, I mean, one of the great advantages to bankruptcy, as I mentioned before, is the ability to redeploy assets. And when you are redeploying assets in bankruptcy, that is done pursuant to Section 363 of the Bankruptcy Code. And what that enables you to do is to obtain a sale of assets free and clear of all liens, claims, interests, and encumbrances. It's a statutory ability. So once the bankruptcy court drops the hammer on a sale, you know, as the buyer, you're getting things free and clear. And that many times is worth the premium. It's worth the price of admission to participate in a bankruptcy sale. Now, the clutch point to remember is that you have to give notice to people if you're going to sell free and clear of their liens or their claims or their potential claims. So from a due diligence standpoint, it's important to know what claims or potential claims are out there. And as a compliance officer, to the extent you can assist in that process in identifying claims, identifying risks, identifying skeletons, if you will, that is where you are going to pay off in terms of assisting your company as a buyer of assets out of bankruptcy. Because again, you want to give notice to these people. You have to give notice of this sale. And if they don't receive notice of this sale, then there's a chance that their lien or claim rides through. And that's the last thing you want, is to buy assets only to discover that a claim that you thought you were getting rid of, so to speak, only comes back to haunt you. But again, 363 sales are a very, very attractive tool for companies looking to acquire assets, and particularly where the assets, to use a bit of bankruptcy speak, have some hair on them, if you will.
That's definitely not something that you want to have come back and bite you later. Now, finally, Casey, after the acquisition, should the integration of the new company that you've acquired out of bankruptcy be different than normal? And if so, how?
Well, the big difference is going to be there's not a lot of chance to do pre-acquisition compliance due diligence. So you're going to have to go in after and do that. The Department of Justice recognizes that there are cases where you can't do pre-acquisition compliance due diligence. So you're going to buy the company and you're not really going to know what the issues are. But they allow for post-acquisition compliance due diligence and they expect you to do it. So to go into the company after and look and see if there's any problems that need to be fixed or reported. As Rocco mentioned, on 363 sale, the best part is you're basically free and clear. But what you don't know, are there any underlying problems? Do you have someone who gives bribes that it just sort of slipped through the crack? Are there any concerns about communications, any harassment issues that were never detected? This is where you need to come in and do a quick and thorough post-acquisition compliance due diligence using a very similar process you would use during a merger and acquisition. You're just doing it after you've bought the company. The Department of Justice has set no timeline to do this, but they expect it to be as fast as reasonably practicable. So when you're doing this integration process, you're going to have to realize bankruptcy process is strenuous. Now you have a bunch of new employees in a new company. There's still a lot of uncertainty. There's going to be some exhaustion, some deal fatigue. And so when you're making the integration plan, you need to move fast, but you also need to move reasonably so that you don't destroy any relationships you may need in the future just to get the integration done. And it's going to require a lot of balance from the compliance officer to do that. And also, if you find any issues, you're going to have to make sure that you address any privilege concerns, determine how and if and when you're going to report it, and make sure that everyone is brought in from the management level to handle those issues.
Well, once again, it seems as if this is a category where speed is important, making sure you get the attention of leadership and really trying to help business proceed as usual, whether it's for a company going through bankruptcy or one that you've just acquired. Well, Rocco, Casey, thank you both for taking the time to talk to us today. I want to thank all of you for taking the time to listen. I'm Adam Turteltaub from SCCE and HCCA. I hope we're able to expand your compliance perspective.